Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast. Believe it or not, it is Eric. Yep, fighting a little bit of a cold here. And with me is my co-host, Raymond.
Hello, everyone.
So I've been using this voice. We're trying to take a vote at dinner with the kids. Do I sound like Lord Smaug from the new Star Wars movies? Or kind of a Barry White thing? We're trying to figure out what voice makes the most sense. But I think I should be playing my Chaos Army until this voice gets better. Just evilness. Let's bring me Kylo Ren. I was like, that'd be cool. Anyway, we have a very busy show this week. Lots of new releases that were teased. We've got three GT level tournaments to talk about and quite a big schedule for next week to talk about as well. So, right, let's get into the new stuff that GW teased us with us this weekend.
Sounds good. So, one of the first things that that at least I noticed getting brought up was a little, what you call it, a blurb on Facebook, a post. I don't have it in front of me, but what we're going to see is Deathwatch pre-release this next weekend, which is kind of a surprise. We've still been kind of in the middle of an AOS release, but it's nice.
I was expecting Knights. I was really surprised. I was like, Deathwatch? Okay.
Yeah, I was expecting Knights too, especially because of the, you know, the Forge Bane having the two Knights come out in that. But no, they've decided Deathwatch first.
So they haven't given us a whole lot of hints what would be in Deathwatch, and I think this is interesting. Both this one and the Harlequin Codex coming out, believe it's May 12th, and then for pre-order. Is that correct?
Yeah, Harlequins, in fact, up on Faye, you can see someone took a photocopy of or a picture of the newest White Dwarf, in which case it clearly shows that the Harlequins go on pre-release the 12th and get released on the 19th.
So both of these are pretty, you know, wafer-thin codices, which is kind of these mini-dexes that came out towards the end of 6th and 7th. And it's curious what they will do with them, because if you think about, you know, so far, the first couple codices that came out, you know, Space Marines, Chaos, Eldar, they're the old favorites. You know, they got tons of models, tons of units that just bring them in line for 8th edition, or the new Warhammer, we should say. Now you've got these, you know, codices that never really got their day in the sun, and we saw how radically changed they did with Tau and Drukhari. So what do you think is going to happen with both Deathwatch and Harlequins?
Well, we know that Deathwatch is going to get some sort of Primaris treatment. I've heard things ranging from between just, you know, the Primaris get, you know, copy-pasted in to the possibility of the units even being able to have, the veteran units having, you know, one or two Primaris being able to go in. I think at the very least we can expect to see the Primaris range get inserted in, although to what extent and how might still be up for grabs.
I'm still trying to figure out how that works fluff-wise, because Death Watch is essentially kind of the elite, like every chapter loans somebody to the Death Watch for a couple of years.
Right.
Are the Primaris legions doing the same thing? Is that how this is supposed to work?
But you have to remember in the lore that all the chapters have access to Primaris. So it's not just the new guys that have Primaris Marines, it's also, you know, the old favorites that have access to the Primaris. And of course, let's not forget that most people don't realize that there is a bit of a time jump that they did in the lore in between when Gilliman gets, you know, brought back to now, of about 120 years.
Oh, so I didn't realize it was that big. Okay.
So in theory, that's enough time for even most of the Primaris Marines to have some sort of a, you know, experience.
Got it. Okay. I am interested. Yeah, we'll definitely see the mix and match units. I think that's kind of been the hallmark of Death Watch. I talked about it before. I'd love to see aggressors with special ammo. They did hint that there are more special weapon options, but it was kind of hard to understand whether they'd have more damage profiles or just different weapons would have special ammo. But I think they're under a lot of pressure because how good Custodes made an elite army. How do you make Death Watch from arguably the worst army right now in the game to something competitive?
Well, I don't know. You can't exactly give every elite army the same kind of access to stuff that you give the Custodians. I mean, the Custodians are an army where basically everybody had a 4+ invuln save. We're not going to see anything like that for the Death Watch. We might see some points decreases, or just as likely, you know, just with the, you know, but greater amount of access to stuff, it won't be quite so expensive. But it's honestly, it's tough to say because there's not much to go off of for them.
Right. It's kind of a blank slate. And what we have seen as a pattern is what was once a formation now becomes a stratagem. So, you know, they had a ton of these small formations, you know, these specialized units that were designed to take out certain enemies. So I'd be curious to see if those all come back in the form of a stratagem of some kind.
Yeah.
But no, I think it'd be very exciting. Looking forward to it. Was hoping to get some concrete leaks about it, but that's because we got something else today.
Yep. So the combat roster dropped, and for at least a certain amount of people, it was not what they were expecting. Of course, it's like the War Scroll Builder for AOS. It works off of the power level, which does not get used in the ITC tournament currently.
I don't think it's used in match play in general.
I mean, there's no reason that it can't.
True. But it's not something...
The outspoken preferred type. And at least for the tournament scene. I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of stuff on the internet where, you know, majority of players play it this way and with points. And actually, I've seen a lot of stuff for people who, they just play power level. Maybe not for tournaments, but outside of tournaments at least. They might still be playing power level, even those who play points in the tournaments. But regardless, you know, they, if anybody read the article, I would note that as far as points go, they're going to have that for the app that's coming out. And the combat roster would be meant a little bit more for, you know, the narrative or the open play or anybody else who chooses to use the power level. Of course, anybody who looks at it, it's very minimalistic. There's nothing about what kind of weapons anybody's got or other upgrades. It's all just about how many units there are, how many models are on the units, things like that, because that's what actually matters for power level.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that with the new Alpha Strike rules, that how you can manipulate the power levels to increase that 50% of your power level to start on the table.
So they very much want you to utilize your codex that they expect you to have on hand for an outside. You know, there's not any, there's no stats for on there or anything like that for the models, for their weapons. None of that. It is simply, here's a list of what I have in each unit. How many actual models are going to be on there, are total power level total. It's very minimalistic. In fact, it doesn't even go so far as to work with the detachments. It's just I pick these models and that's what I've got.
Right. And they've had experience with the AOS version of this. How did that work out?
That's kind of the surprise. So that's one of the things that surprised me, because even in the war score builder for AOS, when you're working on it, you can select stuff for match play. Now, they've only got one point system for AOS, whereas 40K's got two versions. But again, there's one detachment type in AOS, and when you're building stuff with the War Scroll Builder, it will point things out, like if you don't have enough battle line, which are their, you know, what they call the troops and all that, it'll say, hey, you don't have enough. It still has its issues, especially with some of the permissive units that aren't generally troops but become troops. But outside of that, it's good at keeping track of that. We still don't see that in this one yet. We might see that in the near future, but as of right now, it's very basic.
Right. Well, it's a work in progress.
Yeah.
All right. In addition, go ahead.
I was just going to say, before people talk it down and say it's pointless, go with it. It's not that bad. Give it a chance. Give it a chance to become better than what it is on day one.
Yeah, it needs a little time to work, and quite frankly, if you weren't using battle points, maybe it wasn't for you anyway, power levels or whatever. So give it a chance. It's got to be better than that old version GW came with years ago. So I'm excited to see how this turns out. So one other addition that was leaked, sort of hinted at, and then finally confirmed on the Warhammer community page is... in addition to the Harlequin Codex, we're getting some new Harlequin goodies, but it's not just for Harlequins. It's for all things pointy ears.
Yep. So we're seeing something called the Webway Gate. And that is scheduled to come out, I believe it was... I think it's the week after the Codex.
I know it runs about $40, and it's huge. Like, they show a Wraith Knight, and it's maybe two-thirds... The Wraith Knight's maybe two-thirds the height of the Warp Gate, which I was like, wow, that's really tall.
Yeah, it runs about $40, which that's not that bad of a price considering how big it is, but it's not much... There isn't much to it.
There really isn't. Yeah, I think that was the first complaint. Because when you saw what Warp Gates usually look like, whether it be in the Codex pictures or on... Dawn of War video game, they're very kind of a thick two concave curves when they came together. This thing is super spindly with two like Exarch warrior statues kind of melded into it. But hey, I'm not complaining. It's about time we got some more Xenos terrain, and it actually has a function. It's more like a fortification than just a that Death World Forest nonsense.
Yeah. So this gets put up for pre-order the 19th. And is available the 26th of May.
So rumored, supposed to have 14 wounds, about 120 points ish. I forgot what its toughness. I'm pretty sure it's only toughness 6 or 7. But it basically works like a monolith. The portal that, so you can either model some deep strike can come through it and but still following the same rules of deep strike. So I don't know if that's via stratagem, if it's automatic, but all that's the rumor monger said was functions similar to a monolith. So I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. At 100 and something points, and then seeing how successful the Nurgle tree thing is, I mean, you could easily do a fortification detachment of 2 or 3 of those things and really start ganging up on your opponents. Now, I don't know how that fits into the Alpha Strike rule that came out in the FAQ. So that's something we'll have to clarify once we get our hands on the real rules.
So, yeah. Be prepared for more Eldar tricks.
More Eldar tricks and more news. So as we get more information... the more we hope forward. There were some additional rumors. I forgot to mention this because these came out literally, can't remember, was after we finished recording or Tuesday after. Right now it's Monday night, and I just got done watching Dancing with the Stars, the season finale premiere. Anyway, ask me, that was not a foxtrot. But moving on. I'm like watching this. The guy says like popping around. I'm like, this is a foxtrot? Really? Average at best. Anyway, he got a 24. Can't get it. I can't believe it. Moving on. So some of the abilities that supposedly they have is, again, more special ammo options. There's supposed to be an ability where the Death Watch can reduce the number of marker lights that have been placed on them. Sort of like a marker light scrambler weapon, which I thought, like, oh, that's kind of neat. And basically, the long story short was supposedly for every Xenos in the game, they had a trick or some sort of stratagem that would make their life difficult. So I was like, all right, well, I'll believe it when I see it. But some interesting add-ons there. But
that certainly is something that they could use to get better. But I'm curious to see if there's anything that would help them out for when they're not facing what you would expect them to fight against when you look at the lore.
Yeah, that's one thing I didn't like about the previous incarnations. And I know you guys are thinking, oh, no, here comes Chaos Eric downplaying Space Marine. This would be the only Space Marine army I'd ever play. So I thought this would be a really cool army. The whole idea, of course, would be that I have a anti-Xenos army, so default, I would be the best Xenos player because my Death Watch would kill everybody else. But anyway, best laid plans. All right, so as we mentioned before, absolutely, they have the ability to, so allegedly, by this according to this guy, and this is Master Valrock, and you can read it for yourself at Fayette 212. So basically, they have all the Primaris Marines, like we talked about, and was already talked about on the community page. But also, there's a teleportation stratagem, so this is something similar to Gate of Infinity. There is a way for them to get the sniper rule against Xenos players, which, again, I hope that I get a little worried when they get so specialized, and it's like, great, I faced three Imperium players and a Chaos player this week. Great. Definitely get rerolls to wounds and ways to remove Markolites. However, there are rumors of no new additional models, so it's whatever's out there right now is pretty much what will be in the decks. And then getting back to the Webway portal, 120 points, 14 wounds, 3 up armor, 5 up invul, toughness 8, so I was wrong on that. And then set anywhere on the table but more than 12 inches from an enemy and more than 6 inches from an objective. Give the possibilities to deep strike units from it, similar strat, similar to the Necrons, and if it's destroyed, then the guys that are in reserve are dead as well.
Interesting.
So the first thing they're talking about is because Harlequins do have, I think it's Twilight Pathways, it's their version of warp time. So you could come out of the portal already upstream and then get an additional move. So you would move in advance because inherently Harlequins get, well, at least currently, in the index form, can move and advance and charge in the same turn. So then they come in, charge into you, and then, by the way, they can still fall back and then shoot and charge normally, regardless of the flat keyword. So that would get pretty gross. Kind of brings back the old Ulathae webway tricks that back from, I think it was 4th edition. Love that army. That was really cool. It's basically when you had the little wiffle balls on the table to show, like, this was a webway, and you could actually have, like, Wraith Lords and Walkers and all kinds of stuff. All kinds of the Scout Walkers come out and the War Walkers come out through that. So it was a great way to move upfield real fast. So we'll see what happens when we get the actual rules in our hands. So Ray, any other new stuff to talk about this week?
I don't know. I haven't really heard of any other rumors. Have you?
That's pretty much it. Couple other oddball things here and there. Supposedly Battlefleet Gothic might be making a return. It's going to be like a similar where Games Workshop comes out with the base set and then expansions by Forge World. And I was super excited, but then I read this little line at the bottom. It's going to be based on the Horus Heresy. I was like, oh, come on. So it's all Imperial ships. I'm like, that
might start out that way, but I can't imagine that they would actually keep it like that. There's too many people who like Xenos.
I don't know. I have to admit, some of the Xenos ships were pretty wonky rules-wise, so they would take some reworking. The Eldar had a... Basically, they were like jet bikes in 40K, where they could move in the assault phase, or in that case, the ordnance phase. So they were super fast, and remember the Necron ships were just ridiculous, because you get like somebody who'd be like, oh, how do I buy a Necron fleet? There's only three models. Like, you only need two. And it was true. I mean, that thing was just one tomb ship. Was just like, all right, I'll take on your six destroyer, your six cruisers. Let's go. It was amazing. But we'll see, because I know the video game is doing really, really well. So let's see if they latch onto that. Whereas on the other hand, I was shocked to read this. Dawn of War 3 flopped. They have terminated any further development. So if you bought Dawn of War 3, hope you're happy with Eldar Orcs and Space Marines, because that's all that's coming out.
Yeah, I was kind of sad. I mean, I'll admit, I don't run a computer. I don't own a computer that could really play the game off of, but I was really rooting for that to turn out good.
If what I heard, it was really good, but I don't know what held it up, but oh well. So that is our news for this week. After the break, we'll get into our tournament wrap-up for this past week.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
And we are back. We've got not one, not two. We got four tournaments to go over this past weekend. Some of them were really close to the GT threshold, but with all the new news we had last week with the new FAQ coming out, we wanted to go over all of them, give you an idea of what kind of meta is out there and who's doing well after the grand. You know, I saw an interesting comment about that FAQ. There were more changes in the FAQ than there were in some edition changes.
Yeah, I heard one podcast mention that question whether or not we were basically in 9th edition.
Yeah, we'll go that far. I still think we're 8.5, but it's still a pretty big, yeah, it was a big change. All right, starting off with the BrizCon. So your top 8 players are starting in 8th place, Justin Murphy with Adeptus Custodes, followed by Cliff Harvey with Cadian, Shock Troops, Aaron McMichael O'Brien. By the way, this tournament had the coolest names. Some of the guys that didn't finish the top 8, I'm just going to say her name because it's just cool to say. So this is one of them. Aaron McMichael O'Brien. He bought Tau Sept. He came in 7th place. Excuse me, 6th place. Kemble Hollis with High Fleet Kraken came in 4th place. Stephen Fox with Katagen Jungle Fighters. And then it was the battle for the two Eldari players for top spot. In 2nd place was Linford Hullen Bolbart, as I mentioned, playing Eldari. And in 1st place, going a perfect 5-0, your 2018 BrizCon winner is Luke Pierce with Eldari. So let's see how the Thunder Down Under plays a little bit. Luke Pierce. I love his name, his team, by the way. The Normal Blokes. That was an awesome name. Here's some of the other names, by the way. They didn't make the top 8. There's some really cool names. Redmond Kieran Jones. I love that. Where's my favorite one? We should have renamed our kid this. It's like Declan Carter or something like that. I was like, that's awesome. Those are cool names. Oh, Lachlan Carter. There he is. He's also playing Altioch. All right. Anyway, Luke Pierce's winning list. I digress. So it was interesting because he's got, he's mentioning Eldari as his list. So first we thought, well, isn't this the end of soup?
No soup for you!
But he's found a way to bring it back. So we start with a Drukhari battalion. Sorry about that. Two Archons, one both with Splinter Pistols, one with an Agonizer, one with a Venom Blade. The one with the Venom Blade is indeed his Warlord. It's got 3 unit of 5 Cabalite Warriors, no special weapons whatsoever, and 3 Venoms with Splinter Cannons. So interesting, that tells me that the Archons are running around on foot somehow. Second battalion is Kraftworld Alaytok. I forgot to mention, by the way, the Drukhari were actually Cabal of the Black Hearts, so Vex friends. So the second battalion, as I mentioned, Alaytok, he's got an Autok Skyrunner, a Farseer, as well as a Farseer Skyrunner. He's got a good-sized Guardian Blob, a 15-man Guardian Defender Squad with heavy weapon platform. And then he's got 2 units of 5 Rangers. He's got 8-man unit of Shining Spears. And then last but not least, 2 Hemlock Wraith Fighters and a Wave Serpent to keep them all protected on turn 1. So, not a Dark Reaper to be found here.
Eric, what do you think what do you think constitutes a soup army?
Well, the old soup method was you had one detachment and they were all glued together by like the thinnest of keywords. So you would have like an HQ slot, you would have, so like an Imperial soup would be, you'd have a company commander from Imperial Guard, and then you'd have a Space Marine librarian, and then the troop spots, you would have like Adeptus Mechanicus stuff. So you would mix it all together. Now we've got more of an allied type list system, which is
allied is still okay.
Yeah, allied is still
okay. But it doesn't make it soup.
No, it does not. So, but I think that's something where I think a lot of people were misunderstood what soup was. Actually, there are some people, I was shocked how many people were in complete denial. Well, who plays with that? I'm like, everybody who brings Celestine. Nobody's bringing an entire detachment of Sisters of Battle. And so, no, you've got 2 separate standalone detachments. I just thought it was interesting because when you look at this, you got a ton of anti-infantry in the Dark Eldar section. You know, you got 3 Venoms, all with Splinter Cannons, and then you've got the... I take it back. He did have blasters on his Cabalite Warriors. Sorry, I missed that. But he's got a lot of Venom, you know, a lot of poison shots, which is really only good against infantry-type stuff. And then you look at his Eldar portion. He's got the Blob, so you're going to buff that up with various stratagems, and you rely on the Rending and the Guide in Doom, and you've got the 2 units of Rangers to kind of give you a landing pad, but really the heavy hitters in this list are the Shining Spears and then the 2 Hemlock Fighters to do, you know, morale shenanigans and also being -2 to hit from 12 inches. So I'd be curious to see how this played and see some games, because normally the Dark Reapers do the heavy lifting with their high-powered guns.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you look at Linford's list, got a little cut off, so it's a little harder to read, but he's got a Alaytok battalion as well, 2 Farseers, 3 units of Guardians. I can't see, unfortunately, got cut off how many are in each squad. 3 Wave Serpents and a Hemlock Fighter, and then it takes a Prophet of the Flesh, so another Drukhari battalion with Urn Rakkath, which I think is auto take at this point if you're going to play Covens, another Homoculus with Electrocorrosive Whip and the Nightmare Doll, and also Mastery Genis. So he's put a lot into that guy to help buff his neighboring units. 3 units of 5 Racks, and then 3 units of 3 Grotesques, and then 3 Raiders with Disintegration Cannons.
Okay.
So similar idea. We're going to pair Light and Dark Eldar, but very different ways of doing it. But yeah, when I look at that Covens of Flesh, so you got basically way that works is, so the Racks and the Grotesques, they are now buffed up to a 4-up invul. And they also get the, of course, a 6-up Feel No Pain mechanic stock. And then with having Urn Rakkath, so a Homoculus alone gives you +1 toughness. So you're going to slough off a lot of wounds, especially from Bolter Fire and Shuriken Fire. But Urn Rakkath also gives you a +1 strength and a +1 leadership to all Covens models within 6 inches of him. So it's a pretty good buff. And then when you start smacking down those Grotesques, strength 5, toughness 5, the stock. So they go up to strength 6, toughness 6, 4 or 5 attacks, depending on which weapon you use. That's a pretty potent assault unit. So those are some of the top lists from BrizzCon. I just want to take a look. We have another Katagen Jungle Fighter, one of our other tournaments, and we'll talk a look at that a little bit later. So this time we're going to go to back to the States, and this time we're going to talk about the Game Wizard War. And this one's of note because Mitch Pelham went to this particular event. If you recognize that name, don't know from where. We've talked about it on the previous shows. He was Mr. Hellhound. He had, 14 of them in his list. And had a very nice article, actually, on Frontline Gaming talking about how he's dealing with the FAQ and he actually supports it and glad to see spam go away. So had an interesting. So how does he rebound and what does he do and what does his new list look like? Well, let's see what happens. So starting in eighth place at the Game Wizard War was Paul Winters with Slaanesh Demons, which I think we'll start seeing a lot more of simply because they just have the speed to, you know, I don't need Deep Strike. I can get across the table and assault you on turn one. Seventh place was David Robson with, I can never pronounce it. It's one of the Necron code dynasties, Nihalak, yeah, I think so. And then sixth place, Rob Porter with Cult Mechanicus. Nice to see them getting back into the top eight. Dig Danch with Astra Militarium. Derek Erlenbush with Drukhari. That's right. Finally saw some Drukhari getting into the top eight. Mark Farrell with Tyranids coming in third place. Jim Vessel with Thousand Suns coming in second place. And number one, your 2018 Game Wizard War champion is the aforementioned Mitch Pelham with a Talaran list. So let's take a look at how he reinvented himself to be able to go 5-0 at a GT just a few days after the big FAQ. So as mentioned, Mitch made several changes. Still playing guard, so he starts off with Astro Militarum, Battalion Detachment, so he's getting the big five command points. He's got HQ choices of two Primaris Psykers with four staffs. Then he's got Infantry Squad, three of them with nine Guardsmen and a Sergeant. In the Elite slot, he's got a Platoon Commander. In the Fast Attack slot, he's got, old habits are hard to break. One squadron of three Hellhounds, a second squadron of three Hellhounds, and a third squadron of two Hellhounds. In the dedicated support slot, he's got a Trojan support vehicle with Heavy Bolter, which I'm not familiar with. I have to look that one up. Moving on to the second battalion detachment, so it gives him now 13 command points. These are going to be Imperium, and they're also Blood Angels. He's got a captain with a jump pack, a storm shield, and Thunderhammer. A librarian, bolt pistol, force axe, and jump pack. Three units of five scouts. A company champion with combat shield and mastercrafted power sword. And then finally, a Lord of War in the super heavy auxiliary detachment, a shadow sword. Twin heavy bolter, two las cannons, and two heavy bolter sponsons.
So still running plenty of hellhounds.
Still running plenty of Hellhounds. The Shadow Sword gives him plenty of almost the same number of wounds that he lost by having to reduce the number of Hellhounds he had. I don't think he has the same amount of firepower, though. Yeah, each Hellhound had a heavy bolter, so, well, actually, he's got two twin heavy bolters, so maybe he made into last cannon, so maybe he makes up the difference that way. But the overall shtick of the list still works, which is I'm just going to push you off the objectives all day, every day, and you're not going to get near me. And just when you think you're going to get near me, the Blood Angels drop down and beat the snot out of you. So, very interesting list, Mr. Pelham. So we'll see if he continues to work his way into the ITC top 10. Additionally, Jim Vessel, he played Thousand Suns. He came in second. This is another faction we thought would change radically because they were pretty much Codex Zangor, but let's see what he's done here. So a little bit's been cut off here as well. So looks like a detachment. looks like a battalion detachment. He's got a change caster, demon prince with malefic talons, the impossible robe, and wings. And then he has interesting blood letters, 18 of them, with a blood reaper, demonic icon, and instrument of chaos, as well as a unit of 30 horrors, which, can I tell you, are flipping annoying. I hate those things so much. And then round that out, he's got 3 Nurglings in that particular unit, in detachment.
That's a demon detachment.
Yep. And then he's got a 2nd Battalion of Chaos Space Marines, and these are Alpha Legion. Chaos Lord with a Jump Pack, Chain Sword, Mark of Khorne, Power Fist, Sorcerer with Jump Pack, Combi Bolter, Delightful Agonies, Four Sword, and Mark of Slaanesh. Then he's got 1, 2, 3 units of cultists, two of them being the minimum 10, and then the last one being the max 40. And then he's got a unit of obliterators with Mark of Slaanesh, and finally edges that out with a Hellforge Contemptor Dreadnought with 2 conversion beamers in each, one in each arm.
Is that it?
That's it. That is 1,998 points. Or if you, or if you're using, you know, the new app, it would be 112 power level. Yeah, I'm trying to figure out where the Thousand Suns fit into this.
They don't. Which is,
I mean, it's a good list, but I just think it's mislabeled.
It's very mislabeled.
Yeah. Interesting. But it's still a pretty good list. I like it. Because you've got 2 large, actually 3 large deep strike threats. So you got the blood letters, you got the typical blood letter bomb. We've all know how that works. The horror blob works really well. So there's a fair amount of shooting in there. It's under, it catches people by surprise, and killing that many horrors is really a nuisance. He doesn't have any points to reinforce with like blue horrors or brimstone horrors, but it's still pretty nasty. And then he's got the large cultist bomb, which, you know, it's one of those things where you're kind of, you know, you always want to protect your back line because you know they'll pop out in the back of you, but at the same point, you got to go forward to kill some of this other stuff. But I think the secret sauce to this list is the Hellforge Contemptor Dreadnought that gives something we've not seen from Chaos players, and that is a viable long-range shooting threat. It's basically where the Forge Fiend has really come up short. This thing punch holes in your teeth. So interesting. All right, one more list to look at. Got to talk about it. It's not often Drukhari make the top 8, so we want to see what a Drukhari player is bringing these days. So, Derek, what did he bring? Dun, dun, dun. Derek Erlen Bush. He brought Oh my god, it's long. Awesome. This is going to be cool. I'm excited. First attachment is Battalion of the Cabal of Black Heart. It's got 2 Archons, one with a blaster and a Venom Blade. The other one is this Warlord with Labyrinth Cunning, Splinter Pistol, Venom Blade, and Writ of the Living Muse. So pretty standard stuff. 6 units of Cabalite Warriors, 5 of them with a blaster, 1 of them with a shredder. Heavy support, he's got 3 Ravagers, all with Disintegrators. And then he's got 7 Venoms, all Splinter Cannon and Twin Splinter Rifle. So saved a couple points there. So interesting right off the bat. So what he's doing there is, so a lot of people are like, when they see, okay, you got Cabal Blackheart, and all they think about is that stratagem, you know, Agents of Vect. 3 CP is a lot. And if your opponent is, you know, it's handy, it's pretty powerful, but I don't know. What really drives me towards Cabal of the Black Heart is this. Labyrinth Cunning, every time you spend a command point on a 6, I get it. Every time I spend a command point on a 6, I get a refund it back to my total. And at being an Archon, I already reroll once to any models within 6 inches. And then you take this relic, the Writ of the Living Muse, you get to reroll once to wound. So you park this Archon between your 3 Disintegrator Ravagers, and you have this very vicious firebase. The thing I have not had a chance to practice with is, can the Archon keep up with the Ravagers? Because the Ravagers are like movement 14 or 16. And on foot, he's like 8 plus 6, you know, plus a d6. So yeah, you get to reroll it on turn 2, but you take a very mobile shooting platform and make it very immobile. Make sure that still works. But it seems to be a very common trick, so make note of it. He also adds an air wing detachment, and this part was interesting because not only did he take 3 Razor Wing fighters, all with disintegrator cannons, which is pretty stock, but he also added 2 more Void Raven bombers with Void Lances and Void Raven missiles. So he's got 5 flyers on this list.
He's not worried about his models, I guess.
I guess not, and I get to see the being like in a, like an orc army or like the our demon bomb friend from the last list we just reviewed. I'm chasing cars. I can't charge any of those airplanes. That stinks. So that'd be pretty funny. So the Void Raven Bomber is one of it's kind of a neat little ability where it can start inflicting mortal wounds over models that it flies over once per game. It's kind of nice. So it's good that I especially love it when my opponent brings like Ogryn, you know, with or say a Thunderhammer Storm Shield type character. So I'm like, okay, yeah, take a mortal wound on a 3+. So it's kind of nice. All right, as we mentioned, we've got 2 more, and this one also close to home here in the United States. The Barnyard Brawl. I've not been able to confirm one way or the other whether this was actually held in a barn. Interesting enough, the very first Bay Area Opens were held in a barn. It was hay everywhere. It was pretty cool. Anyway, the Barnyard Brawl in 8th place. We had Philip Hall with Dark Angels. Nice to see them make an appearance in the top 8. Andrew Ford, who has been a contender for ITC in the past, comes in 7th with Inari. Lance Nauman with Jukari comes in 6th. Remy Collin with Necrons comes in 5th. In 4th place with the Tau Empire was Nicholas Shaner. David Uzawa came in 3rd with his Grey Knights. Runner-up was Michael McCaffrey with Chaos Space Marines. And your 2018 Barnyard Brawl champion is Michael Walsh with Astra Militarum. Hey, good to see them back on top again. Haven't seen that in a while. So it's one of those armies I always thought would do really well, and it kind of faded off, and I think they're making a resurgence since the FAQ dropped. So let's take a look at those top lists. So he goes, ooh, very pretty. He's got like a backdrop of the whole 9 yards. All right, he starts off with a brigade. So rocking 12 additional command points right to start. He's going to be Cadian as his regimental doctrine. He's got 2 company commanders and a Primaris Psyker in the HQ slot. In the troop slots, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Wow, 6 infantry units. All of them 10-man, all of them with, all except the last 2, I should say, with a mortar. The last 2 are just without any special weapons. Then in the elite slot, he's got 3 platoon commanders. And the fast attack, wow, here's something you never see anymore. Rough Riders. He's got a unit of 5 Rough Riders. Unit of Scout Sentinels. Looks like it's just 1-man units. He's got 2 of those to fill out his fast attack slots. And then in the heavy support slot, he's got, surprise, surprise, heavy weapon teams. 1, 2, 3 units of 3 mortars as well. But he's not done, because he adds a battalion for an additional 5. So right now he's at 20 command points. And this is going to be more Blood Angels. Start to see a theme here, guys. And he's got a captain with jump pack. But yeah, Storm Shield. And oh yeah, he's got the Angel's Wing on his jet pack. You take the Thunder Hammer and the Thunder Hammer. Took another captain with the same thing except for the relic. And that's how he took a Veritas Vitae instead. And then his 3rd HQ slot, good old Mephiston. It looks like 1, 2, 3 units of 5 scouts, and then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 Death Company Marines in a single squad. And then follows that up with, yep, one more detachment. So it's only one command point, though. Supreme Command Detachment. And with this, he's got, he's got Adeptus Custodes. 3 shield captains on Dawn Eagle jet bikes with Hurricane Bolters and Misericordia, except for one of them has the Aquilus and the Hurricane Bolter, as well as the Misericordia. And then he's also got Vexillus Praetor in the elite slot with Storm Shield and, oh my god, a whole bunch of stuff. And that finishes out his list at exactly 2,000 points, or if you're using the new app, 131 power level.
It's interesting.
I mean, it's all your favorites. I mean, there's nothing in here you haven't seen before. I don't think I've ever seen these three flavors in the same list. But as I was doing some research for tonight's show, this seems to be more the norm. You know, we've already seen 2 lists today, Guard with Blood Angels. I saw several lists with Guard and Custodes. Who knows? Maybe we're going to see Guard, Custodes, Death Watch. Who knows? But that gives you a ton. I mean, he's got a ton of bodies on the table. So that's 1, 2, 8, 6. So just in troops alone, he's got close to 60 models on the table, with an additional platoon commanders giving additional support. And I'm not sure where the Rough Riders fill in, but I think it's pretty, you know, probably just objective grabbers for movement. But then you got the heavy weapons team, so you got, you know, them in the back. And then you got these forward threats with the Blood Angels, and then of course the Custodes is flying forward on their bikes. That's just, with all that ridiculous invul saves, that's going to be a lot to deal with. Suddenly -1 to hit for LA Doc doesn't seem that bad. So, pretty amazing list. So here, you know, kind of start planning ahead. This is what you need to be competitive moving forward in the new 8.5 world here. Let's take a look at Michael McCaffrey's list. He's the second place player, and he had Chaos Space Marines. And Chaos Space Marines kind of got, I mean, a lot of people feel that the current builds really got hit hard. I think there's plenty of tools still in that Chaos Codex, but let's see what he brought here. So his first is a battalion detachment from Demons. He's got Demon Prince of Khorne with wings. And he's got something crossed out. Oh, and a Demon Axe and a Poxbringer. Then the troop slot, he's got Bloodletters, Nurglings, and Plague Bearers. How many Plague Bearers does he have? Looks like a lot. It's hard to read this. 20. He's got 30 of them. He's got them maxed out. And 30 Bloodletters. So he's got 2 of the large bombs. So he's got the big screen. He's got the big bomb. And he's got the Nurglings going scouting forward to create a landing pad for him. Of course, he'll be coming down in turn 2 now. So he follows it up with another battalion of Chaos Space Marines. Interesting enough. Hey, surprise, surprise. Alpha Legion. Demon Prince. Sorcerer on Jetpack. A max out squad of cultists of 40, and then 2 more minimal squads of cultists to round out his troops. A Hellforged Scorpius with a combi bolter, Scorpius multi-launcher. All right, here we go. Some more Forge World nonsense. And then, of course, a unit of Obliterators with Mark Slaanesh. And he rounds it out with a patrol of Thousand Suns involving a Demon Prince of Zeech. With the Helm of the Third Eye, you're going to have to help me out with that, Ray. I don't know what that does. He's the Warlord, and he also has wings. He's got a unit of 10 cultists, and that's it, just to round it out. Coming at 2,000 points, or 111 power level, depending on which system you like to use. So what's the Helm of the Third Eye?
What that does is it's how they can get command points back. You roll a d6 each time the opponent uses a stratagem, and on a 5+, you gain a command point.
Ooh. That's not nice. And he's got, what did I say here? He's got two battalions and a patrol. So he's already sitting at 13 command points. Yeah, he's got quite a bit to play with. Quite a few objectives in play. So the Halfords Scorpius, which Ray knew off the top of his head, of course, is a large tank, toughness 7, 11 wounds, 4 attacks, 12-inch move, weapon skill 5, and a blitzing skill 3, but interesting, as it gets damaged, the weapon skill gets better and the blitzing skill gets worse, which I think is hilarious. Hellforce Scorpius is equipped with a Scorpius multi-launcher, combi bolter, and the Infernal Hunger. So Infernal Hunger is his close combat weapon, which, you know, not something to sneeze at. It is strength 6. It is minus 3 AP and only damage 1. He's got 4 attacks that are hitting on 5s in the beginning, but as he takes more damage, he'll eventually be hitting on 3s. Scorpius multi-launcher. 48-inch range, heavy 3d3, strength 6, AP minus 2, 2 damage. And this weapon may target enemy units that the bearer cannot see. So it's basically a big old mortar. And you can also add on some havoc launchers. And of course, you've got the standard combi bolter on there. There's more fun. So it has Machina Malefica. At the end of any turn in which this unit has this ability, has slain any models in the fight phase, other than through Overwatch, roll a number of d6 equal to the number of models it has slain. Each of these scores results in a 5+. The unit heals 1 wound. This unit cannot be healed above its original 11 wounds. So there's some... That's pretty nasty, actually. Rocket Barrage. On any turn that the Scorpius does not move during the movement phase, it may fire its Scorpius multi-launcher twice in the following shooting phase. Okay, that's where it gets deadly. Like most of the Forge World Chaos stuff, it explodes rather easily. And it also has smoke launchers to help keep would-be, you know, alpha strikes away from you, and also long-range shooting on turn 1. That's not bad. And it's a 12 power level. I'll double check how many points that is. Hell for Scorpius. It's 175 points without good. Oh, I'm sorry. Scorpius multi-launcher. I saw something else. It's 40 points. So it's 220, 210, 215, actually. Still pretty cheap for what it does. It's not too bad. So, very interesting list, very exciting tournaments. We're running a little low on time, so I just want to acknowledge some of the top players at Conflict Norwich across the pond, because we do have several of our listeners in Europe. I was actually surprised. You and I need to make a road trip to Denmark. Apparently, that's the country where you have the most foreign fans. But the top 8 at Conflict Norwich... In 8th place was Darren Cooper with Ultramarines. 7th place was Lee Evans with Death Guard. Jim Vesey came in 6th with Eldari. Rob Lloyd with Tau Sept. We're seeing a lot of that. In 6th place. In 5th place, Adam Gardner with Grey Knights. Don't see a lot of that. Good job there. In 4th place, Seaman Miller with Inari. Tau Sept once again coming in 2nd place with Vince Chan. And this year's champion for the 2018 Conflict Norwich is Malik Amin Rubio with Eldari. So check out the Best Ghost Pairings app. You'll notice that they use the ITC missions, so that's why you notice all their scores are kind of on a 0 to 20 scale. So a little bit of a different scoring system than we're used to here in the States. But you know, check out that mission pack. It's kind of fun. Also, double check, guys, if you're running tournaments in your local area. I notice a lot with these results, it seemed like they got mixed up. Like, I looked at a friend of mine, he was like, oh, wow, because he had a tough weekend. He came in 23rd, and then I saw he went 4-1. I was like, how do you go 4-1 and come in 23rd? And I think some of the TOs maybe got confused by combining the painting score with the general score to create a best overall type situation. So just be careful of that. All right, after the break, we'll review the ITC top 10, and at that point, go over next week's tournaments and wrap up the show.
May 19th and 20th, the Grimdark returns to Phoenix, Arizona. The Scorched Earth Open 2018 is upon us. Arizona's premier 40K event being held at the Plaza del Rio Community Center, located in Peoria at the intersection of 101 and Thunderbird Avenue. Scorched Earth Open. Details can be found at the Scorched Earth Open Facebook page or by listening to the Exterminatus podcast. Scorched Earth Open. Tickets are now available at the Best Coast Pairings app. It is a six-round event limited to 60 players. Tickets are now on sale for the Scorched Earth Open May 19th and 20th.
Okay. Welcome back after the break, and let's review the current ITC top 10 for this week. Several changes, not only from the events we talked about earlier in the show, but also some additional updates has been done by Best Coast Pairings. So with no further ado, in 10th place, Michael Serpada. So I apologize there. That's a cool name. Michael Serpada. Sounds like a Latin singer. He resides in the 10th spot, 199 points off the lead. Kieran Howard of New I believe he's down in either New Zealand or Australia, somewhere down under. Edges out Michael by 1 point for ninth place. Jared Friedman, he's completed all five of his events at this point. He's sitting at 197 points off the lead. So again, 2 points ahead of Michael, 1 point ahead of Kieran for eighth place in the ITC. We talked earlier to Mitch Pelham about his list. He's currently in seventh place, four events under his belt, and he's 191 points under the lead. Sean Naden climbs up to number six. Captain America is 187 points off the lead. Gary Frank, we talked about him 2 weeks ago. He's also got four events under his belt and 174 points off the lead, residing in fifth place currently. Daniel Sansone is hanging in there. He's got his five events done, 168 points off the lead. Making a huge leap forward, was originally in seventh place last week, jumps up to third, is Jeff In Control Robinson. Four of his five events complete, 123 points off the lead. In second place, same as he was last week, Matt Root, 53 points off the lead as your Adepticon champion. And in first place, still for the yet another week. I don't know if anyone's ever going to catch this guy. Josh Deff at 617 points over five events. So he is your current number one this week. And has been for the past, quick look here, 6 consecutive weeks. So big shout out to Josh Deff. Ray, what events do we have coming up next week?
All right, so this next weekend, we've got three large events. We've got the GrotzCon 40K 2018 at the Black Knight in Red Deer, Alberta, Canada. The Alamo GT at St. Joseph's Hall in San Antonio, Texas. And the Storm of Silence at the Gamers Haven in Spokane Valley, Washington.
Oh, that's a big event. It's a long tradition there. And don't forget, of course, May 19th and 20th, Scorched Earth Open here in lovely Phoenix, Arizona. Tickets are available currently at the Best Coast Pairings app. So that concludes our show for this week. My name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.